Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Masonic Home Companion. Good to have you join us again. Thank you very much. This is the 14th of June, the 165th day of the year. It only leaves us 200 days of serious preparation for New Year's. And we can celebrate, my goodness, 2016, 6016 Anno Lumine, isn't it? We have a countdown coming, going on for the solstice. How many days do you, left? 7 days, 4 hours, 37 minutes, and 19 seconds. There you have it. The balance, of course. You know, this is equinox we passed some time ago. The darkness and light imbalance. Now we're stretching it out. And with the Earth tilted closest to the Sun in our atmosphere, or in our hemisphere, showing us the most sunlight, the most light of the year, the longest day. So I hope it'll be in your mind next time we get together. It will be solstice, and it will be, we'll make a point of having some mention of it, of course. This is rooted back in our history, and we need to talk about things, I think, inspiring, and some things that will provoke the imagination today. And I think we can begin even with this nod that we do toward the solstice, because remember, it wasn't that long ago when calculations for Masonic meetings were made around the lunar cycle. One of the things that's puzzled me for a long time is why we withdrew that. We still have some so-called lunar lodges, but we no longer leave it to the mathematics for anybody to do a calculation to determine what night the meeting is on. And I always find that a bit... I don't know. I think we've given up. We've given up something that was quite unique about the order, and I can't quite understand if it was just for that push in the 50s and 60s for everything science, everything modern. We hadn't really found our got our feet underneath us about science. We weren't really sure what in the world happened during the at the end of the Second World War. The use of science to incinerate so many cities. I don't know if the world will ever quite get over that. Apart from the rhetoric and the muscularity of the discussions, even though most of the scientists that worked on that project signed and endorsed a letter simply asking the military not to use the weapon that had been created from their efforts, even though that was the case, then the morality of it has often been suppressed. Here in Canada, we're facing a similar kind of question more recently with the release of the report about Native people. So I'm going to not worry about the or focus on the unanswerable questions. There are many questions that have been answered, but how, the question that I ask all of you as my advisory corps, how to move on, how do men of good conscience move on? When When we can't find answers to questions that we know, we usually close down. And we've seen what's happened with deniers of the Holocaust around the world. Cultural genocide at its it was defined perhaps then. Historians will look back at other periods in our history of mankind when the carnage was far greater, the terrorism was far keener. There are people that come down to us in history with that type of ignominious history about them. But people like me feel maybe odd to you, that when we find these abhorrent minds in the world, when we discover them, that their name should be erased from history, that that name should never be mentioned again, as the act of good men dealing with something that is a stain on our conscience. But in the same instance, I understand that the memory of what happened is a safeguard to ensure that if we see aspects of that creeping up on the horizon again, that we won't be that laconic group blinking following watching our man go to slaughter, that we'll actually get up off our hind legs and do something about it. These times have changed, and now we have less tolerance for that nonsense. And somebody spouting, they're disguising their so-called rights to disgracefully using and abusing their rights to free speech to promote something that's very dangerous to the community that we all work in and live in and breathe in. So as citizens of the global community out there listening to Masonic Home Companion today, I implore you to help me find the answers to find a way of healing and true reconciliation. And because this is all about me, I can't quite figure out how to reconcile. I've experienced the generosity of Native elders when I was up in Yellowknife, and in a way that I never had experienced from my culture, enormously powerful. I am ashamed to say that there is a greater sense of command of forgiveness in some Native cultures, most Native cultures, than there is within the culture as I define it from my experience. So I need your help. I don't know quite how to do it. But I'm not the kind of person to walk around with wanting to carry baggage with me, but this is certainly something I'm putting in my pocket, and it's not going to go away for a while, and maybe it never should. That way you can safeguard that no children will ever suffer the way that those little kids did. We won't get started about what this says about the country that we're in, or the ethos of religion at the time, or the so-called power of the church at the time. Well, I don't even want to get into that because it seems to detract from the gravity of all of this. But we have to get back to the point. It's why did we give up something that was unique? Well, maybe we didn't realize that it was unique to follow a lunar calendar. And I know a lot of good fellows out there that would really quite enjoy being able to do that, to be able to make your calculations and show up. And if you don't, well, that's your doing. That's perfectly. I don't know where we became afraid of that. Here, I'll put this to you: was this the result of the uniformity of military training? Remember, we talk often about the impact of soldiers coming back to. From the battlefront, and thank them very much repeatedly for everything they did. I do, unashamedly and abashedly, anytime, anywhere. I feel a great debt to those men and women. But was this an unforeseen or unidentified effect? Where in the military, we know that uniformity is critical. It's very important. And then look at what's happened within Freemasonry, where there was an injection of all these men getting into the order. And in the 40s and 50s and 60s, it continued on. It was very, very, it was just this wonderful wave of energy coming in and people wanting to continue that fraternal sense. I don't know after you face danger with other people, if that sense can be generalized to an order, but you know, it's you're hard to find other similar experiences. Freemasonry certainly allows that to happen, but what's the inference seen here? The effect of uniformity, because now we have a lot of I don't say uniforms. Well, we do. We wear uniforms. In a sense, we want that uniformity. And how money? We can't say it's just the old boys. This conservative, the ultra-conservative Mason will often, wearing brown shoes with a blue suit. Like, where, you know, how are you getting into a lodge? You know that attitude that I'm talking about. If a man is pure of heart and mind, we would want that. We want to welcome that. But the uniformity, we like. What source of this? And if you're thinking of this as a blame and shame game, get over yourself. That's just your own bleakness. I'm not talking. I don't talk in that kind of language. This is a phenomena. It's happened. So let's take a look at it and understand what it tells us. What story does it reveal? So I'll postulate one, that this reveals that uniformity. And with that, the emotional experience of safety. You know, there is. And it is that in-group, out-group, we against they. And we still see, you know, this loudish bumper sticker. If you're not with us, you know, you're behind us, then you're in front of us. Like, really? That's the best you can do. That's sort of, I don't know, is that NASCAR machoism? I don't think so. I know a lot of NASCAR fans that have a little more going on than that. We are within the craft. We encourage that discourse. We encourage the dissenting opinion, don't we? Ask yourself again if uniformity has rolled over and become more of a myth than the reality. As the generations go by, we find that, you know, we often hear Scots will talk about people here wearing the kilt in this area more so than they do in Scotland today, because we're left with a picture of home that we a far and distant shore that we left, and we're not there to experience the constant evolution. Time didn't freeze wherever we came from, whatever shore we came from. Time didn't stop when we left it, but it's like seeing your very dearest friend say goodbye to you, and the way that you see your dearest friend is the way you remember your dearest friend. And when you see them 15 years later, you know that feeling like, oh my goodness, he's grown old. Well, so has everything. It's just changed. We put the value judgment of new and passage and all that. References, things that we really don't understand, but we're trying to make sense of something that was yesterday and something that's tomorrow. If you ask what the heck that is, very few people that use those terms can truly tell you whatever it is. So let's just think for a moment, or consider for a moment, was that uniformity part of the initial philosophical foundation for the Masonic order? You know, it's hard when you put a group of people in a room and say, I'd like to, and we're listening to original things, creators, scientists, artists, people that are coming up with ideas that are innovative, not derivative. And I put myself in that category of derivative thinker, that there's great ideas around me, and I'm always amazed. And I have, do you have a sense that you're original in everything that you say and do? Well, you're fortunate, I think. I don't. I always feel that there's some embellishment in history or embellishment or greater awareness in science or the arts that I've just, had the good grace to see or to understand, to experience. And those shape shape ideas. And we'll go back to this some other times, but I think it's important. We, you know, the essence of a free man, you hear that in our work. I'm not going to explain the work here because this is an open line here. But, you know, it goes something like, when you see a man, dot, dot, dot. Well, that doesn't mean that he attends everything, that he competes to be everywhere, that he needs to shake every hand. That has nothing to do with it. I suggest to you, this is a man who's comfortable within his own skin, within his own sphere of reference. You might say comfortable no more than what he has within his grasp, and goes about his business and conducts himself as a good man. Now we want to plug in, and is uniform in his dress, uniform in his deportment, and compliant with his attendance. Well, it doesn't say that. So I want to cast that a net of a challenge to the naysayers of masonry. That I don't think masonry is a matter of volumes. As our volumes go up or down, I don't think that's a reflection of health. You may not be going to meetings. You may go to every meeting you can for whatever is going on in that part of your brain that makes you do that. All right, and you convince yourself. You know, we all like the things that soothe are consistent with our own experience. Very, very few of us have the capacity to take the blinkers off and try to look at the world through the eyes of somebody else. Of course, masonry at the deeper levels comes along with those types of notions and really gives us a bit of stick about it. Like, really, you can't do that? Well, that's okay. You're a young apprentice. But this is the process of the unfolding insights. And I'm bright and I say everything without a flaw. And I'm being good. Well, really. That's what it takes. And then a month later, we discover another layer of meaning and think, oh, I didn't know that before. So now I'm good. I think I've got it. And then you bump into some, you terrible masons out there that are saying, you know, oh, there's this process of the cabal. Do you know anything about it? You know, it fits in, you know. Then you think, well, I don't even know what that means. And then, oh dear, tree of life. And then, oh dear, you know, this is going to take me a while. And of course it does. If anything worthwhile is, you know, you may get that aha moment, but it comes from a lot of work. And the contemplative mind that we try to draw on here at Masonic Home Companion needs to play with your imagination. So the kindness here that seems to be lacking, not the grumpy, you know, we've all experienced bad manners in lodges. So those boys here are a disgrace to their parents. So we just leave them. I'm not their parents, you know. If they don't know how to talk, you know, they don't have their mother around to make sure that they adhere to good manners and conduct with others. Well, that's on them. I'm not going to correct them. You just move on, you know. It's a shame, you know. Their parents must be very proud of them for being rude and, what's the word, ambulant. Yeah, that's it. Anyway, you get the gist of what I'm talking about here. Yeah, of course. I try to pay attention to you, and these are things that come out of our conversations. The darn thing about it is when I start to unravel and examine the conversations, it's like, oh, this is going to take a while. How do I say something thoughtful and responsible back to you? You know, it's a little bit of a problem if I'm trying not to be just a superficial, plug in the wall here. I'm fixated a little bit with the work of Walter Whitman, if you don't mind. I just he teases the mind. So we're going to put up a few little teasers here, and then we'll get into the nature of our talk for today. I've got some really, really, I think, interesting accents, music being the accent. Now, if any of you can think about another adornment for Masonic Home Companion using the arts, please let me know. I, of course, love because we're listening back and forth here, I use music. But I'm always open to new ideas. So, and I'm just trying to write down one of them right now so that I make sure I get it right. And I don't forget, you know. I want to be a good boy. I want to be a good person. So here's a little bit of a teaser. Now I see the secret of making the best person. Ah, got your attention, didn't I? It is to grow in the open air and to eat and sleep with the earth. I heard what was said of the universe. I heard it and heard it of several thousand years. It is middling, well, as far as it goes. But is that all? You know, it's like when we start to describe our Creator. We have faiths right now, some of the more robust faiths on the planet, on the face of the earth, that believe the very idea is sacred. So to describe it is a way of, is blasphemy, because it assumes at a deep level, it's not that superficial, oh gee, my dad's bigger than your dad, you know, that kind of nonsense. It's more like, you know, what is sacred for people, for a good person, and how profound that influences, the nature of that influences their life. Well, there's people that believe that we want to be careful of the image, you know, the images of the Creator. And yet we read in history that, was it Cleo II, the Pope, that made it a papal, you know, all right, as much of a law as a Pope can do. I'm sorry. But to worship idols. Now, you think, well, gee, you know, we got to go back and look at what that means. I'm talking to you as if the expression of the creation is nature around us, and we being part of it. So Walt gives us this little pearl. Let that which stood in front go behind. Let that which was behind advance to the front. Let bigots, fools, unclean persons offer new propositions. Let the old propositions be postponed. Likes to challenge us intellectually, doesn't he? I love this. And for those of you who remember the t-shirt, I reject your reality and insert my own. Here's, I accept reality and dare not question it. Whose reality? I accept my reality and dare not question it. Your reality? Different. There is that indescribable freshness, he says, and unconsciousness about an illiterate person that humbles and mocks the power of the noblest expressive genius. You know, it's like that natural art before you're trained, put into harness. By the way, people were showing signs of genius well before we had literacy. The mind is not contained. Like, we might be compliant. We have little rules, and we're taught all kinds of rules that make it, quote, right and quote, wrong. Well, the human brain doesn't work that way. It's a little lot hugely more complicated and enjoyable and fascinating than anything that we could come up with around the notion of compliance. I'm not a big on compliance, that lockstep kind of thing, but I do think there is a room for compliance. I want to have an understanding of, remember we talked about what the world was like before we had common, we agreed on the spelling of words. So English and the pronunciation, you know, so there was a time when English, we couldn't really cipher out whether it was English or French, because pronunciation was too very much colloquial. And the meaning, well, the spelling was enormously fluid. So I like that notion of compliance. So particularly the English language has nuance that other languages may not have. Not to say they don't. We have different nuance. So I'll leave you with this last. Why are there trees I never walk under, but large and melodious thoughts descend upon me? Why are there trees I never walk under, but large and melodious thoughts descend upon me? So share with me. Go to that space inside your mind and bring your imagination to the forefront. Without being able to employ the imagination, there are certain questions in life we are unable to answer. So that sense of whatever your sense of reality is, I implore the artists out there amongst us, the worker bees, the people that have put their tools down because they have finished. You know, I've finished my work. And I know there are many of you and here that around me that are, it's not a stage of a life, it's a stage of mind. And what does that leave us? The freedom to take command of our time. How you use it? Do you use that just to live in a haze? Well, you're doing it for a reason. You're healing for some, you know, you're reaching for something. So I want to talk to you today about the logical outcomes of events. Is that okay? You all right with that? What does the future hold in store for Freemasonry? Oh, this is really, I think this was right up there on my shopping list for a long time as a topic to bring up. And I've been waiting for the right time, and it just seems like, you know, feels good about doing this right now. I'm here to tell you that Freemasonry will prevail. And I'm not saying that just because. I'm not saying that because I can see it or that I can see any more into the future. But it's what Freemasonry reveals that suggests that it will prevail. Of that, there is no question in my mind. So the people that are thinking, oh my goodness, we may go down to our membership may change and continue to get lower. No doubt. And it, will it be prone to artificial growth? Yes, of course. You know, there'll be people wanting to put billboards all over the highways and doing things for the sake of promotion instead of doing things that they know is right. And watching the effect of being aware of the effect on other people, we come up with these artificial, you know, these transparently artificial behaviors. In the idea that we're so damn clever that this is going to have an appeal, it's going to inspire men around us. The thing that inspires is that symbol on your hip, that the men and their activities. Are trivial by comparison to the power of that symbol. And what do we do when anybody comes up and talks to us? You hear that you've heard it. Very few. The scholarship is so low. My goodness, it's like it's all very superficial. That kind of behavior is translated into the disguise. Well, of course, these guys aren't going to reveal the secrets out there on the street. Of course not. So they're going to prevaricate. And of course, that's why they don't reveal any of the secrets. Well, what do I do? Whisper in the guy's ear and say, well, they really probably don't know. Or it's a crapshoot about whether the guy has done any reading. Well, you know, how long do we have to know the guy before he figures out that kind of compliance isn't part of the deal? I wish it was. I wish the compliance wasn't on whether you polished your shoes when you came to a meeting and showed up directly on the dot. You know, that let's do things like brave little soldiers kind of thinking. Well, come on, I'm not a toy soldier. And that's not masonry. It's not. But you get 100 people in a room all say the same thing at the same time. The cadence is rather interesting. Is it accurate? No. It's just, let's get through this and all agree, and then it will be, all the headaches will go away, and anybody that's with a dissenting view, well, that better go away too. Well, this is the kind of thing that happens when we don't contain it. It just floats around. Well, it's not toxic to us. It's a matter of engagement. It's not always proper, of course, the manners of interrupting an agenda. That I think we have to accept that there are some manners and decorum that it defines us. But there are those opportunities to have that conversation offline or off the grid, and you will find the thoughtful Mason that will engage you. The rest doesn't define the rest as wrong. It doesn't. It's that you are making some kind of connection that's important in that moment, in that time, with another fellow that's similarly focused. that will continue. That energy between you and the minds, that will continue. Always has and always will. You know, but it will not be in the form that we know it today. As we move forward in the future, the form will change. Today, our thinkers spend long hours considering the source of change, you know, the motivation for it. In an unguarded moment over the centuries, our history has had effect, perhaps most surprisingly of all. We can trace our roots back 300 years. Yeah, we can trace that. Our culture, well, I bite my tongue here, and people that are the scholars will take me to task. All right, we'll say, what, 15th century? Are we getting closer? 14th? But not so speculative, but okay. So we're looking then, the conversation about defines what masonry is. Is it the conformists of today operating 700 years ago? No. It's the ideas, and the philosophy. We're really talking about philosophy, an effort to arrive at meaning out of the chaos and the phenomena around us. So you and I can take, I was thinking the Grand Lodge of England, 300 years, all those anniversaries coming up. Our culture and philosophy links us to the greatest empires and remarkable thinkers. Threads fine as spider's web tie us with the strength of a covalent bond to a powerful past. Our apprentices, as good as they may become, face the challenge of brilliance, as we did. That's the standard. It's not, you know, ignoring it. Well, you don't have to. Well, you're absolutely right. If you have the talent to play a violin, you don't have to. If you have the talent and capacity within you, with proper mentoring and training and dedication, to be one of the finest, to be the Fitz Chrysler of our time, it doesn't mean you have to. No, get over yourself a little bit here. This is fulfilling a need of a form of expression. Do you need to do it? Not in the sense that it's a chore, but in the sense of a driver deep inside of you. Do you need within your mind to be a better man in your own mind, not to the extent that everybody around will see you as a bit of a competitive lout. Look at what pictures of the ghosts hanging on the walls tell us, as if they're defining what success is. Well, I never knew that another man's success was a measure of mine or yours. I never knew that. Nice that, you know, people have done well, but what we don't see on those walls are the moments of inspiration. Let's say you have done something really beautiful for another human being, that you have carried out an act of sincere, authentic charity, not because other people are around bearing witness to pat you on the back, but just the opposite, because it's the absolute necessary and right thing to do at that moment. And even the person, the recipient, doesn't know it was you. Or where is the picture of you on the wall? Where is that? The moment, if I knew about it, would be inspiring, because that's the type of thing that inspires. And if you're a man who can be or is inspired, then what that brings up is the question of what it is that inspires you. And if it's petty or self-serving, you and I are dismissed, because it's meager. That's the meager human condition. It's all about the ego, right? But when we see an act of selflessness, we begin to identify the different types of charity, not that demeaning nonsense, but the more meaningful fifth level of charity. Where's the picture of you committing that? Where's the form of that? Well, I hope the artists out there, the poets amongst you, are trying to convey that notion in stanzas, in on their canvas with their brush, their paint. And if not, I have to believe that on that wall, the unseen pictures of the ghosts contain all of that brilliance. All of that brilliance. And so the forces impacting us today are forcing us to realize that we do not have popular appeal to refill our ranks. As smart as we are, we have not been able to solve the riddle of decline with answers that are not exactly wrong, but so far always complete. They're always incomplete. We are fascinated by what is taking place. We have that fact. It's almost like a, I don't know, it's not a phobic, no, and it's not a fetish, no. But it's a fascination. And when we ask ourselves, why is this going on? We see effort that is mediocre. That's what we see. Why is this happening? Well, these guys aren't making the effort. We're bringing in the, you know, our standards. They're wrong. They must be wrong. It's, you know, it's like the, why is this product not perfect? Well, you know, we've just brought in the wrong kind of marble. That's obvious. And why aren't we seeing life? Well, the sculptor didn't remove all of the excess rock. You know, that's what's wrong with it. Well, I'm saying it's not a supply side kind of a complication. We look at mediocrity. All these guys that aren't, you know, they aren't that clever, but they'll sit on their hands. They're good men. But they'll sit on their hands. They're even, you know, in a candid moment, they'll talk about the difficulty they have reading. Well, that simply means, is that a showstopper? Well, there's lots of ways of learning. Be creative. You're thinking that at your age, somebody's going to come along and show you? Well, all right. There's today, I'm, what, one or two keystrokes away from learning how to teach myself. I'm sitting here at a screen. It's hard. It's harder and harder and harder to avoid. It's harder to say, because it's, you know, I'm having this, I can learn in a completely uninterrupted form here. And the limit is what? My need to learn. So we are fascinated by that. What we see, you know, if there's a decline, it must have to do with mediocrity. Well, I say it has more to do with the phenomena than it does with the supplies, that the supply of men, because I like to think that masonry itself is the inspiration. You take a man who's living a mediocre life with a mediocre mindset, really doesn't test himself, hasn't been taught how to challenge his abilities, doesn't really know how to connect with those small slivers of talent that he shows, that a learned eye, an experienced eye, can see very quickly. He doesn't know how to do that because of his inexperience. And he may be 45 or 55, but that doesn't stop us from realizing that he's has the potential for constant growth. So we'll say it's the mediocrity of the membership. We've let in the wrong kind of people. Well, all right, but I don't know what the right kind of people would be, because if we were only letting in the right kind of people, that would only leave you and I wouldn't be part of it, wouldn't it? And then we stop. It's insufficient to satisfy the promise of excellence. Insufficient to satisfy that answer of mediocrity. That's not enough. We've got the promise of excellence, that which is beyond our capability, always striving. So when we say, you know, it must be the mediocrity, really, the mediocre could rise up and say, well, it must be the mentors. It must be the scholars. They haven't fulfilled their obligation to teach us. Well, gentlemen, it's not that we, they. Put your fingers down and take a deep breath. You're all wonderful boys. I have the. I'll send a note to your mothers about how good you are today. But you know, stop that finger pointing. That kind of an answer is insufficient. What we're missing is the meeting of the minds that is necessary. So, mediocrity all around you. I'm part of that. You're part of that. We're all mediocre in some ways. What we need, though, in order to excel is the meeting of the minds, a connection. Now, how do we do that? That takes effort. How you do it will be different than how the next fellow would do it. But the fact is, it's a process. It's a process. Not of and it's not of doing this in being harnessed. It's a process of agreeing, of demonstrating that this is, of going after it, that this is something that you hunger for, you long for these answers. Not emotional. You know that voice where somebody's doing some work in the lodge and they're sounding like, I'm such a good little boy. And I'm answering with that sort of, I just want to kick there. Put on your big boy pants and sit down. Not that. I want to talk to people that have their feet on the ground and sound like it. The rest, glad handing and all that. I'm sorry. I don't think that's part of it. Not to be unfriendly, but, you know, great ideas cannot be killed deliberately or through negligence. You and I walk into the lodge and we see that enriched symbolic experience around you, and 99% of the guys don't. The messages contained in those symbols is not going to fade away. It's not going to die. They can't be killed. How often do you have to read another variation on the same thing, 100 times, 1,000 times, before you realize that everybody has their own opinion. And the draw isn't to necessarily accept somebody else's opinion. Like, you know, this old guy, he was a writer, he owned this, you know, that makes it powerful. Well, it really doesn't. He was probably just like you and I. He was, not probably, he was like you and I. But it was a symbol. The question I want to know is, what effect did that symbol have on that man? What effect does that symbol have on you? I'm tire of somebody saying, well, you don't get it, so we need to write about it for the nth time. Well, if you're not getting it the first time, you're not getting it the nth time. Because, you know, who's going to talk to you about melody? You know, a musician? Yeah. An artist? Yeah. Yeah. You want to know the rules of art? Well, you know, there's some things that Michelangelo was doing. Do you want to know what they are? Well, actually, today you can actually read about them. And do they still work? Yeah. Yep. Great ideas can't be killed. History has taught us that when great and powerful cultures have lost the ability to overcome their smugness, they have faded. What am I saying? That we have a great and powerful culture? Yeah, I think so. I'm not ashamed to say that. I think there's something remarkable about the culture of Freemasonry. The way we do things, we have a distinct language and this distinct meaning to words. We have a form of liturgy, you know, a form of it. We have a form, but not quite the same of the high priest. But it's not. Oh, there it is. There's that religious connection. But it's not. It's something different. I always think these other forms have taken Freemasonry to their own purposes. To be honest with you, I see Freemasonry as the purity. I do. I think it's wonderful because we're offered that opportunity for enlightenment. Aha. They faded. In other, those great and powerful cultures, when they can't overcome their smugness, they faded. But not so Freemasonry. We are neurotically obsessed with the feeling we're sinking, or coming to the point of realizing it is not that we are doing anything wrong. It is that we are beginning to realize we must rely on ideas to make our culture successful. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? This is what, you know, when you go into a Japanese garden, we're seeing the imagination at work. And the Japanese have a beautiful sense of, you know, you go in and it's, the words that we use, remarkably, is that things seem to slow. we become aware. The marks in the stones mean something. But along that path, we're being given a moment to we are given a moment to change our thinking, to be able to enlist our imagination. Because we may live in a world of sound bites, but we think in a world of connections. The sound bites are imposed. It's like a little pellet that is aimed at us. And it's aimed at us to get a reflexive response. It's like if somebody touches you on a nerve ending and you jerk. Well, they may be wanting you to move in a particular direction. So they're thinking that they can manipulate. And yeah, they can. That's the whole science, isn't it? Remember, we talked about that coming out of the First World War, and the merchants and governments realized that their influence could continue on in peacetime. And so now think about what I'm saying here. It was the military and the government that came up with this notion, you know, that thrived on this notion. Feeling good about it? Really? All right. Don't hit me. No. Don't be chasing me. All right. You know, I'll have the flaming torches up the driveway this evening, and I'll be chased out of town. And all the good citizens don't want this kind of notion running around, but it's there. It's that we're not. It's not that we are doing anything wrong, really. It's that we are beginning. This is the emergence, the new light, 21st century. That we rely on ideas. That's the truth. The success of our culture are the ideas, not the grandeur or the decrepit nature of our lodges. Yeah, I don't think they represent us. They represent us. They're a symbol, and a lot of them look. They've been neglected, and a lot of them look like there hasn't been a shred of imagination. Come on, there's stuff just hanging there. How many of them are clones? There's that sense of uniformity that I think is you know, that's very powerful. And I think it takes something away. What we can do within the limits, what can we do within the limits that define us culturally? Mainstream thinking doesn't seem to work. You know, we have one idea and we all have to adhere to that. Well, you know, we heard a lot of complaining, I think, about the efforts to bring about a uniformity in a ritual. Well, the jury's still out about that. Can the ritual be performed? But there's standards. Some of it gets really, you know, people are just, what we can't do is risk the deterioration of ritual. But when I say we, if that's what takes a lodge down, how am I going to stop a natural process? Lodges are formed, they live, they die. And this, it's not that the lodge, you know, when I hear the lamentations, it's like, oh, that mustn't happen. Well, really? So nature mustn't happen? The natural course of nature shouldn't happen. Is that what you're telling me? That everything that we build should be there forever? Really? Well, what we're seeing isn't what we're building. What we're building is in the mind's eye. So if some horrible person can convince themselves to push a button and vaporize everything around me, they won't vaporize the idea. It may vaporize the baubles and the jewels and the furnishings, but the idea will prevail. The phoenix rise from the ashes. You want to kick it around and show it disrespect? It's hard and painful for me to watch that, so I probably choose to try and avoid seeing it. But you're not going to extinguish the brilliance of this culture. And it's not because I say it. It's because it contains things that can't be killed that way. Can't be. Again, I think masonry that we haven't had is not that it's been withheld. It's that, gentlemen, we've had other priorities. And this part of the patch of the universe and on this planet, this little part around us, we're busy polluting the water and making the air toxic to breathe, and we're thinking that we're going to last longer than the dinosaurs. Our kids are dropping like little flies with all the allergies and, you know, breathing problems. Well, you know, you've got the Chernobyl core floating around up there in the atmosphere, haven't you? Well, we don't want to think about that, because that really was just the cost of doing business. Who knew? We all knew. Oh, well, let's put some nuclear plants right next to the drinking water. That's a brilliant thing to do. So we have to laugh at our own stupidity. What else are you going to do? The Mason in you will operate in a world of common sense, the common sense, the commonest, the singular purpose that benefits us. Not that we have to get aggressive about it. There's one way of thinking, and the rest of you are wrong. Man, it's we're the bunch that can sit back and laugh. Watch our smugness, though. We're like any culture. We have those moments and areas that are very smug. We have sacred cows, but we also have rude manner. You know, we do. But there is. We also have people that can appeal to a thoughtful mind, the contemplative mind, to consider these ideas. And if you want to be sensational, you can take this out of context, and see the sparkling response. All of you, our culture and what we think and do is within that context. So I don't want to go on here right now about this. This is what I call the logical outcomes of events, the logical outcome of events. Let me know what you think. Oh, that's what I was going to write. The new email Gmail account. I'll do MasonicCodeCompanion2015@gmail. Now, when the program's over, I'll create that one, okay? Send me your comments and your ideas and challenges. And I never think of the audience of Masonic Home Companion as I mean, you'll get there, but you get there by your own path, and that's what I like about you, all of our brethren out there and our guests. So we'll move on. I want to get in back into the work of W. Kirk McNulty. You know, we're having a great time with that in the previous weeks. So I want to move on with the points of the compass. And we're going to talk, and maybe today I need to do this as a tribute to Ornette Coleman. He died on Thursday. He was 85 years old, jazz saxophonist. A little bit later, he was a Pulitzer-winning jazz legend. Yeah, 85 years old. Anyway, we'll do that as a tribute to the music. That's more than Masonic and lovely. Here, not the event itself, but not the instrument itself, but the ideas here. Let's play with some more ideas. We've played with the ideas that come to us dripping out of a tracing board. And now I hope that each one of you will get a chance to be in Lodge and to sit there and just look at it as you would a famous painting, and look deeply at it and pull from it the story it tells. Pull from it the statement. If you think it was created by a committee, that there is no statement, you know, committees never create statements. That comes from a single mind. If that's the case, go ahead, you know, fine. That tells us something, doesn't it? But if you think that this is a connection, like I said, the strength of that spider web of an idea that has connected men, of like-minded men, from the beginning of time, tell me. Oh, my goodness. We're going to talk today, coincidentally, about points of the compass. This is enormously great for me because I just bought a sailboat. Woo-hoo! Happy dance. The cosmos is coming together. I'm making that cosmic connection here. There is one last thing we should note when we're moving on from the study of... we're looking here at the craft of Western metaphysical tradition. So we're moving on from the metaphysics of the tracing boards. We saw earlier that Masons traveled from west to east. Symbolically, they traveled east in search of instruction and west to propagate the knowledge they had gained. As the lecture in the first degree has it, think about it. Notice that on the third degree board, the cardinal compass points have been reversed. Did you notice? And west is now at the top, where east was on the first board. It suggests that the Master Mason, in fact, having finished the interior journey, not just simply in titular rank, you know, the interior journey, conscience, mind, the individual who is represented by the symbolism depicted here has changed his orientation and has started his westward journey. Remember, you're facing one way, right? And now you're facing the other. It is a journey involving the profound teaching and charitable nurturing of those who follow. It's like that journey across Spain, that pilgrimage across Spain. Campostelano? Yeah. And some of you may have taken that. It is a journey involving the profound teaching and charitable nurturing of those who follow. The profound teaching and charitable nurturing. So when you reach that orientation, you have some value. Oh, go out and impose it on the world. That's what makes you really wonderful, you know. Not at all. With all the obligations that sort of thing implies, we have the notion of completion. We owe, pass it on. This way of thinking, which is outlined herein by the use of Masonic symbolism, is a profoundly noble view of humankind. That it was the very core of the European thought about human beings for more than 300 years. At the end of that period, at the end of the Renaissance, in the late 1600s and early 1700s, a great many very interesting things occurred in Europe. Those things influenced us, yeah. Two of them are related directly to human individuals. In Northern Europe, initially in England and the Netherlands, we observed for the first time a form of government which we can call democracy. And we've talked on the program about the early constitutions developed in the Netherlands, Masonic constitutions, the legitimation of the order of Masonry. The Greeks conceived of the idea, but nobody ever carried it off until this attitude toward mankind had prevailed for 300 years. That's a lot of marinating with an idea, don't you think? Second, in the same geographical area and at the same time, we observe that the governments of Europe consciously abandoned the use of torture as an instrument of policy. Don't get me started about the torture that's going on in Canada with our people that are incarcerated. These are two very significant events. These ideas about the nature of human beings have been lost in our contemporary, very materialistic society. Maybe in part because the craft has largely stopped teaching them. I think we can own that. Maybe these ideas about human beings are worth thinking about, perhaps even worth teaching again. I must say, although, that Freemasonry does not lead candidates on this interior journey. Freemasonry simply confers the degrees which contain these ideas for those who are open to them. Any individual who seeks to experience this interior journey must do it himself, on his own, and in the context of his own religion. No compliance, gentlemen. No, nothing to do with compliance. You're going to pick up the instruments? You going to learn? What holds us back is our lack of imagination. What holds us back is us. The biggest threat, most dire threat to our culture is us. If we fail, we have failed Masonry. Masonry hasn't failed us. It's been a gas having you here again. I got to go. Come on back and talk again. We'll have this conversation again. Here's a little taste of Ornette Coleman, the old saxophonist. And I've got some interesting tunes here that we're going to... You're going to like them. I know you are. I know. Old public road, I say back, I am not afraid to leave you, yet I love you. You express me better than I can express myself. You know, when you're leaving the path well trodden and you're stepping out on your own path, the sojourn. I might not agree with McNulty here that it's a journey. I think it's a sojourn. We take it in small steps. We look around and then we take more small steps and we keep doing that. What have we learned? Do we have to stop and practice something before we can move on? Do we have to build a bridge? Well, you know, sometimes it's easy and we stride along, the path's wide and the sun's warm. To have great poets, there must be great audiences. To have great lodges, there must be great masons. So, that quarrelsomeness, that's just our boys kicking dust on each other's shoes. In the confusion, we stay with each other, happy to be together, speaking without uttering a single word. Let's stop being confused. Little Ornette Coleman, let's do just a taste. You want to hear what he sounds like? This is from a show that he did in Berlin in 1972. So it's a live performance. You'll get a taste. And you think about the influences on the music at the time. Where did this come from? Thank you. Ornette Coleman. Acquired taste, isn't it? Now, here's a little music that I think brings to mind what you do every day. You answer this this question. This comes from this song was written by our brethren, George and Earl Gershwin, and it was written in 1926. This particular piece was recorded in 1959 when the singer sings with from the George and Earl Gershwin songbook. The arrangement was by Nelson Riddle. You can imagine that. This is one of the greatest American songs, I think, performed by one of the greatest American singers.
Over me.
that works, don't you think? Found this. This is a little bit unusual, but I wanted to share it with you. This is live at the Baku. This is the opening ceremonies of the 2015 European Games. This was the opening ceremony. And I'll let the, this is tape, just a short piece. And I'll let you experience it for yourself. It's remarkable. If you care to look for it, you can find this on YouTube. It's just a remarkable piece. Complete surprise, pleasant surprise.
Tarihli etmekten şeref duyuyor ve her birinize uğurlar diliyor.
Great athletes of Europe, you have been chosen to compete at the first European Games. Protect this new flame of excellence, friendship and respect. Azerbaijan is proud to be your host and wishes you every success. And now, a song for the athletes.
İndiyse idmançıların şerefine mahmut etmenir.
Please welcome
Garşılıyor
Lady Gaga!
Sharing
Having you here. I'll see y'all again. Bye.